You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
This is Phil Davidson, and with me today is Rockford Symphony Orchestra music director Yaniv Attar, and we are discussing the second Masterworks concert of the 2024-2025 RSO season, happening on Saturday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m., of course, at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. Welcome, Yaniv.
Good to see you, Phil.
You know, so the title of this program is Symphonic Classics, and it features the selections of Haydn and Mozart. So why do you consider these pieces classics?
So when I talk about symphonic classics, I mostly meant the classical period of classical music. So Haydn and Mozart, of course, are the forefathers, if you want to call them that way. You know, we have the Bach up to the Baroque, but the real classical ones, Mozart and Haydn, are the, you know, really the center of that period of music. Ligeti, of course, isn't. He's a 20th century composer. However, so in this particular piece that he wrote, and he did not write many like this one, he was more kind of leaning towards some older composition styles. So you could call it neoclassical, which is a movement of they went back to the classics like Mozart and Haydn. So in general, it's a lot of classical, but Ligeti brings the little twist.
I see. Well, okay. So Ligeti's family was Hungarian Jewish, and that kind of led to some rough times for his family and him in the 1940s, I think. Did it not?
Yeah. I mean, I think his education had to be stopped. He was sent to labor camp. Both his parents went to Auschwitz. I think his mom was the only one who survived, from his family, besides him, of course, that survived the Holocaust. So yeah, it was a tragic upbringing.
He is described as one of the most influential avant-garde composers, at least in the latter half of the 20th century, and also one of the most innovative and influential among progressive figures of his time. How so?
You know, during the 20th century, and especially after the two world wars, many composers have tried to come up with new systems of compositions, new language, new way of writing music. We got to this era in history where we have the two world wars and it's complete chaos. And to put this aside, come with a new language. A lot of those experiments, in my view, of how we listen to music today, have not been successful. And I'll be the first to admit, this is the first Ligeti piece that I've ever done in my life. I haven't conducted any of his stuff, which what we are playing in this concert is quite rare for his composition style. It's much more avant-garde and out there, the other stuff that I don't know how much it will resonate with people today. But yeah, he tried to find a new system, and his compositions, you know, they're brilliant. But we have to have different ears to digest those kind of things. So I didn't want to put it with the classics that we're having for this concert. But this piece is definitely a unique and not part of his crazy avant-garde kind of type of writing.
Well, we are talking, of course, about the Romanian concerto.
Right.
And I believe it was banned for a period, was it not?
Yeah, and it's funny to think about it because it's a lot of the music is, you know, very folky, real folk tunes in Romanian culture, but with a lot of dissonances and twist, if you wish. And back then, when it was composed, it was basically banned after the first rehearsal. I mean, it didn't even get to be performed. And then it was left and hasn't been performed until 1971.
Wow.
So quite a long time after. So it's crazy because we hear it today and it sounds totally ordinary and fine to our ears now. But back then, it was considered kind of a shock.
Well, can you expand a little bit on what we will hear? I mean, for example, I believe between the movements, there's no pauses.
Yeah, so it's basically, it's going back to old style, even in terms of the form. There are four movements. They're all very short. The whole piece is about maybe 12 minutes. Four movements, slow, fast, slow, fast, which is a typical form from, you know, Renaissance, Baroque, you name it. And then, you know, the phrase structure is for the most part, quite square until it changes, and then you get the shock. But you hear real, very tuneful melodies. Some of them are real folk tunes. They're very fun. They're very playful. And then, you know, in between, you hear things that are out of ordinary. Sometimes it's as if somebody's playing out of tune or something. It's supposed to emulate village bands, which he heard a lot during his lifetime, and was part of his whole research about folk music, just in the same way like Bartok did for his Romanian folk songs. Although in Bartok, it's less of a twist. They're more ordinary in that sense. And Ligeti is taking it, you know, a notch up in terms of the funkiness, I should say.
Well, then we'll move from funkiness to Haydn's Trumpet Concerto. Haydn has been called the father of the symphony and also the father of the string quartet. Why did he receive those descriptions?
So Haydn really took both the string quartet and the symphony form of writing to a completely new level. And that's why he called that. He wrote 104 symphonies that we know of, many, many string quartets. And what he was able to do with those forms in terms of the themes that he would bring, the way he developed them, which is crucial, how he broke the rules that were conventional at that time in terms of composition. It's like every composer, they had all these rules of writing compositions, and every major composer that made change eventually broke those rules until breaking the rules became a norm. So for somebody like Beethoven, for example, to write what he wrote, the way he wrote it, would have not been possible without the music of Haydn. This is why he was always referred to as Papa Haydn. So I love that nickname.
I was reading, I believe during his younger years, Haydn was a singer. He was a music director. He was a chorister. So how did he get on the road to composition, and what types of compositions did he create back at that time?
I mean, he was such a prolific composer. And, you know, at that time, it wasn't so rare for musicians to be so accomplished, you know, especially if they were hired by a court and they had to, like, to wear so many hats, so to speak. So I think, you know, it wasn't rare for him. I don't know how he was as a performer. I don't think we have, you know, recording from that time. But we do know that the composition was the most central part of his life. And that's the long-lasting influence he had on the music world even today. Even when a lot of people compare Haydn and Mozart, to me, we see Mozart as the genius that we always talk about. But I think Haydn is a lot more unpredictable, for example, in his composition style than Mozart was. The problem with Haydn is that it's, I think, a lot more difficult to play his music in a convincing way. So much of the music of Mozart and Haydn in general, they didn't write many instructions on the page of how you should play it. Uh-huh. These things were taken for granted back then. Like in romantic music, like Mahler, etc., the composers did not trust performers, and they write everything, how loud, what articulation, I mean, every little detail. And in Haydn's time, there was nothing. So a lot of people play today the music of Mozart and Haydn the way it was, the way it's written, actually, which can sound totally boring. With Mozart, it kind of works. You can still enjoy the music. With Haydn, it's not. And if you don't have the imagination and the understanding of the style, then it could sound boring, for sure.
So why did Haydn specifically write the trumpet concerto?
It's an excellent question for two reasons. I mean, Haydn wrote about something between 40 and 50 concertos. Most of them are totally unknown today. Nobody plays them. There are the famous two cello concertos that he wrote. There's this piano concerto that is often performed, and the trumpet concerto. The rest, I remember performing once these oboe concerto. Not the best, I would say, but the trumpet concerto is one of his most known concertos. I mean, for two reasons. When he wrote it because the new trumpet was kind of invented for mm-hmm. this specific virtuoso, which I don't remember his name right now off the top of my head. But the invention of the valve trumpet that you can, not a natural trumpet, you know, the natural trumpet could only play certain notes in a certain key. And if you wanted to change notes, you had to remove a part of the trumpet, put another one, and it's a whole process. But the valve trumpet allowed you to play all the chromatic notes. And so the extension in possibilities was enormous. And Haydn was very excited about this new development and wanted to explore the trumpet as an instrument, as a serious instrument, like never before. Which, to me, it's also a tragedy, because Haydn, in a way, opened the door to many other composers from then on to write trumpet concertos. But you don't. There's no Mozart trumpet concerto. There's no Beethoven trumpet concerto. There's no Tchaikovsky trumpet concerto. It's an instrument that was totally neglected in terms of concerti writing until the 20th century. And I don't know why, because Haydn, again, he opened the door, but nobody wanted to go in.
Hmm. Well, now, you do have a guest artist who will be performing during the trumpet concerto. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yes, Paul Morkello. He is the principal trumpet of the Montreal Symphony. And I remember him from my days when I was a student at McGill in Montreal, and I used to go hear the Montreal Symphony a lot, fantastic orchestra. And I remember, I still have in my head the first time I heard him play a solo, not as a soloist, but just from as a member of the orchestra. And it was, wow, what a sound, what musicianship. I mean, he's phenomenal. He's so versatile at perfectly anything. It's kind of depressing. Really one of the greatest trumpet players living today. And I'm so excited to have him here to play this concerto with us.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing him. So we move on now. Symphony number 40 by Mozart is the last piece on the program. Mozart is widely regarded as one of the greatest composers in the history of Western music. Why?
It's a great question. I think it's got to do with where he got musical language in terms of expression and emotional depth. Mm-hmm. For his time, at such a young age, the complexity of his works in those terms that I've just mentioned, I think it's been unparalleled ever since, and very few succeeded to do the same, after him. And it's phenomenal. And to me, the most incredible thing is when you look at some of his manuscripts, it's amazing. It looks like a printed page with a perfect artwork. There's not a single scratch or squiggle or change of anything. They say it's as if God dictated the music and Mozart wrote it. Hmm. It's just, which is funny, because as we're performing this symphony number 40, this is the first movement is one of the rare example where you see a change. Mozart wrote a tempo indication at the beginning, Allegro assai, which it's meaning quite fast, and then he changed it later to Allegro molto, which is very fast. It's one of the rare examples, but it's again where he took drama in music is to a completely different level. I think what's so fascinating about his music that there is so much drama, almost like an opera. So every symphony, every concerto, it's almost like an opera. And that was where his heart was. He was an opera composer. And he brings that drama from the opera world into his symphonic writing, into his piano writing, into anything that he did. Like there was a story in everything. And I don't think any composer up to Mozart ever did that.
Now, his career was not always a smooth road, right?
I don't think any composer had a smooth road.
Well, I think his was particularly bumpy.
Yes. I mean, you know, even when we talk about whether this symphony, whether he even heard it performed or not, some scholars say he did, some scholars say he didn't. I think he did mainly for the reason that there are two versions for that symphony. One does not have clarinets, which was... At his time was not common to use clarinet in the symphony, and in the second version, later version, he added them. So clearly he felt that something was missing, and I think that's probably been when he heard the piece performed live. And there's even a testimony somewhere that the first performance of the symphony was so bad that he walked off the performance venue after the first movement. he just couldn't listen. It's so hard to imagine, right, as we know this symphony so well today. That's probably his most famous symphony out of the 41 that we know he wrote.
Now, why did you choose this one? I think we've already heard some reasons, but
I think they're all great. There isn't particularly that I chose this one. I do think it's very unique in many ways. I mean, imagine out of the 41 symphonies he wrote, only two of them are in a minor key. That's pretty remarkable. So I think they have, again, this drama effect that we know. But you know, the first theme in the first movement, is probably the most recognized tune in classical music. Might be even more than the Beethoven fifth, pa 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 pam, that we all know. I think it's such an icon when it comes to classical treasures. And again, I'm referring to classical in both meanings of classical period and classical music in general. It's such an icon, which I thought would fit really well with this program.
Well, this really sounds exciting. And by the way, of course, we invite everyone to be part of Soundbites.
Yes.
So would you remind folks about that again?
So this is Friday before the performance, 12 p.m. at Monatisi. There's a luncheon that you're welcome to come and purchase. And usually I have an interview with the artist. For this one, Paul Markella couldn't attend because he has another concert in Montreal and then he flies here. But we have our legendary own trumpet player, Mark Baldwin, who will be there to have a discussion with me about the program in general. But particularly, I would love to hear his thoughts as a trumpet player about the Haydn Trumpet Concerto. And Mark is so knowledgeable and so entertaining. You don't want to miss that.
Yes. Well, I guess we all should get ready to experience symphonic classics, which, of course, is presented by the Rockford Symphony Orchestra on Saturday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. And if you need more information about the concert or tickets or anything else, go to rockfordsymphony.com or call 815-965-0049. This is Phil Davidson.
And I'm Yaniv Attar, music director of the RSO.
Thank you for listening.